You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 197. For those of you joining on the podcast, baseball season is officially over, November 6th. I know fantasy has been in the books for a while, but Steve, we were talking off air about just the incredible playoffs, World Series, a lot of fun stuff to watch and just enjoy the sport for what it is and all its glory in fall baseball. And then, you know, we get to plug back in to some off-season prep here, and we're getting into the second half of our pitcherless mock draft takeaways, looking at round 12 to 23, which is always very fun because that's kind of the flyer range, trying to get some breakouts and some sleepers, all that good stuff. We'll get into that. And then kind of last segment of the show, we'll go through some of our fantasy MVPs for the year, kind of the overall best, and then kind of the underrated value picks that we're taking in some different directions there. So gonna be great, man. I know the podcast came out 2 weeks ago, but the last time you and I met was 3 weeks mm-hmm. ago. So we had back-to-back 3 week gaps. I feel like, you know, I gotta just look at you like a friend that I haven't seen for months and months, and I'm like, how you doing, man? How's life? But how is it going out there?
It's good. This is probably the October was probably the month that we talked the least in 5 years, right? Just because we yes. kind of recorded earlier in the month, we like stacked the shows and didn't actually talk in reality. So yeah, that was a little strange, but yeah, it was a great month of baseball. I know we were talking off air and wanted to get into it, but you know, I obviously always watch the playoffs, but you know, there's varying levels of, you know, exactly. life that are going on that's going on. You know, I also spend the entire 6 months prior obsessively following basically every game. So like, you know, to give my wife and just myself sort of a break, and me not having a true team that I'm a diehard fan of, you know,
cherry pick a little bit.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You loosely follow it. But this playoff, that was not the case, just because there was so many good series, so many good games, so many good individual moments. Like, just thinking back, like, Yankees Red Sox was good, and that seemed like a lifetime ago, right? Like,
yes.
Guardians Tigers was a great matchup, right? Seattle Detroit was amazing, right? There was really, like, other than like the NLCS where it was Brewers Dodgers, every other series was at least entertaining a little bit as a casual fan. Yeah
exactly. Even the Brewers one, I remember because I was on the road doing some video shoots, and a guy that was with us was from Green Bay, so we were like talking about the Brewers, we were watching a little bit at the bar. I got back to the hotel room and like flipped on my TV, and I told you that was my silver lining because I was on the road for 3 weeks, but it kind of was just the perfect setting for all of these late night extra innings playoff yeah. games. But I'd like I flipped on the TV to like check in. I'm like, oh, this game's probably over. And it was like the Brewers were on offense in Milwaukee, bottom of the ninth, full count, bases loaded, full count, two outs, bases loaded. And I was just like, this is everything about the playoffs. Like, it feels like every time I'm looking at a TV, it's must watch, can't turn off TV. And then some of those games that were just like extra innings and, I don't know about you, Steve, but our text thread was just alive the entire yeah. time. And, you know, sadly, I was definitely from the very start of the playoffs saying anyone but the Dodgers. So, you know, that has kinda to be same. Acknowledged yeah. that yeah. it was a bummer. I actually threw a hedge the emotion bet on them for game seven.
Shout out to my buddy Luke and Dan, who live by that. They never bet on their own team that they're rooting for. It's always on the opponent.
And we were all screaming. We had a Halloween party on the first, and we're screaming at the TV when, you know, the slide home and barely missing it, all that stuff. And then, you know, once they actually ended it, I was like, well, the life hedge came through. But yeah, that's aside. It was just insane, dude. And there's probably even, I mean, you got to always be careful with playoff fantasy reactions because we've fallen into the trap so many times before. But that's a mini tease because one of the names we're going to talk about was from the mock draft, obviously had a huge postseason as well. But yeah, great for the sport in general. But then on the flip side, you know, just with the payroll and everything, it's like it would have been real nice if the Jays could pull it off.
I don't necessarily.
I'm just pointing to that.
Yeah. I hate the narrative that comes with it, right? Like that, the fact that, oh, look, because the Dodgers now won two in a row, this is bad for baseball. Like, I hate that this is now, it's sort of like a confirmation bias in my mind, right? Like,
yeah,
the Dodgers are
doing
this and, you know, to a certain teams could, you know, being here in New York, right? Like, there's no reason why the Yankees can't do that. They choose not to. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you see the percentage of like revenue that's invested back into baseball operations. And like it's the Mets and Dodgers are the, you know, team that are like 80-90% and everyone else is at like 50% or below. Right.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, I know that's one data point that I'm referencing offhand that I don't have in front of me. So take that with a grain of salt. But I don't buy that, you know, I think it's an excuse for these other teams to cry poor. And I know there's other sides of it and angles of it. And especially in a world where, you know, local media rights are not as valuable as they once were and yada, yada, yada. But I have less ill will towards the Dodgers than I do towards the other owners saying, you know, like, you know, the Dick Monforts of Colorado, like saying, oh, look how unfair this is. It's like, no, you just like, don't know what the hell you're doing and don't invest nearly as much proportionately, at least as the Dodgers do. So save it essentially for those complaints. But on the other side of it, like I did find myself becoming a Blue Jays fan there. I really did want to, I just, you know, became enamored with a lot of their players, found them likable, was really pulling for them. So I was kind of disappointed, like pretty disappointed for someone that doesn't have a horse in the race per se, but it was just an amazing World Series. Probably the best since Cardinals series.
I got into an Instagram argument because everyone was, someone said top three World Series game of all time. And I was like, yeah, don't forget game six, 2011. Yeah. It's got to be in there. Yeah. And he's like, this was a better game than that. And I was like, whoa. So we were breaking it down. I mean, I think if the game were to have been played in LA, that's such a big thing for me. Is like the crowd, like whether you're playing versus.
Yeah, but the crowd in Toronto, I thought was amazing.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh,
but
then you're
just
saying like the celebration.
Rains on the parade type of thing. Yeah. I always like, you know, root
seeing
for the
home team win. Yeah.
Yeah, but for atmosphere purposes. But dude, yeah, it was nuts. Like you said, you look at this playoff tree and it's like, you know, there was the Cal Raleigh stuff. Like it was awesome. The whole playoffs was awesome. So that's great for baseball. You know, and it's a game of inches. Like you could rerun 100 of those scenarios and it might not have had the same outcome. So as it relates to the payroll and everything, at least it's still an awesome product for the viewer. So yeah, anyway, none of that was on the rundown. It just goes to show that, that was awesome and worth talking about. But Steve, I guess, you mentioned it. We obsess over this all year long. And then now is kind of the time where we can take a little bit of a break. We hit on it in our last episode that this mock draft is the first time we're starting to kind of get acclimated with, you know, who goes where, what different spots of the draft are, different trends there. And if you guys missed it, last episode we covered kind of the early rounds, the pitcher runs, you know, when, you know, how it's changed from last year a little bit. And now we're looking at a pretty fun part of the draft where I feel like you were, in the 5 years we've done this, kind of your calling card is that you try to find these late round pitchers. It's the name of the game, right? But this starts at pretty much pick 130 and looks out and beyond. And it's a section of the draft that I've fallen in love with from like 130 to 220, where I feel like every year I want to grab like 10 guys and I can only get five. But it usually seems like two or three of those turn into fantasy all-stars. And if you can do that, which I think we've done pretty good as a show at doing, and it's not to say that it's not influenced by other, you know, industry influencers and trends and everything, but if you can get those, you know, 14th to 17th type of round picks correct, really it's more about is the core of your team going to stay healthy and productive? And if so, you got a pretty good shot at winning your league. So it's a fun spot in the draft. I guess overall thoughts before we jump in, we got some kind of big picture grouping trends, and then there are some just player names we'll call out as well. But thoughts on looking at kind of round 12 to 23 here?
Yeah, it definitely is, you know, the most fun part of the draft for me, right? Like, you know, especially as we get deeper and deeper into drafting season, which, you know, starts sooner and sooner, as we always talk about on the show. But what's interesting to me is, like, I think considering we did this basically essentially the day that the regular season ended or close to it, there'll be a lot of names here in this section that we'll talk about that, you know, will start to rise. And hopefully the few that we highlight, you can get a suppressed discount if you draft a little bit earlier in December, January, right? Because a lot of these guys that we like will, the rest of the industry and prices will go up as people start to draft and focus more on these values. So it's sort of a, you know, it's doing your homework and, you know, testing the waters a bit and getting like your driver's learner permit for the draft there. You know, you're stacking some early review process and preparing for, you know, the finals and midterm coming up, right? You're doing your homework early.
Exactly. And it's kind of on us to formulate some opinions on some of these names. That's what I always get out of this. I mean, it's flattering to be in this draft with the, you know, the Enos of the world, mm-hmm. and, you know, just the entire podcast network is so sharp that I always find myself learning and scratching my head. And then as I dig in, most of the time it's like, oh, that player is interesting. That's why they went up there. But we'll talk about a few of those names, but it's fun before everyone is talking about them in February to kind of do a little bit of our own homework.
And another thing during this range, like, we do these drafts on Clicky Draft, right? And I think the way that ADP works, it's like from fantasy, or from like the way the player ranks work, is it's from Fantasy Pros, and it's like a rest of season values, right? So like if a guy's hurt, they're not going to have any value for the rest of the season. And I'm saying rest of season for 2025. So it's not like it doesn't reference any ranks or anything like that. It's just, okay, this is where we think values are. So like, there's always like, man, I forgot about this guy, exactly. You know, that I need to manually type in. You know, I thought that we got a few, but, you know, it's pretty funny that when that happens, it's like, man, I wish I would have remembered that, or if I saw that name, he would have been on my queue or whatever.
Yeah,
this guy
came back late in the season. Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, without further ado, we kind of teased it a little bit, but Trey Yesevich, who was one of the kind of shining stars of the entire postseason with the, was it record breaking or tying 13 strikeout? I think it was tied.
It tied for the record, which is tied for the record. Nuts.
Yeah.
Like, and you hear some of, like, insane. And sorry to interrupt, but.
No.
Like, you know, like, there's more postseason games now than ever, right? So, like, you see, most home runs in a single postseason, most home runs all time, right? Like, mm-hmm. of course, those volumes are going to go up as there's more games and, you know, people now, like guys on the Dodgers played more World Series games than, like, I don't know, Lou Gehrig or who, I don't know, I'm just making up a fake statistic, but, you know, there was only 7 games, right, when Lou Gehrig played, right? Now there's, you know, 30 or whatever it is that a guy could play. so like a single game postseason record is that much more impressive. And I know that that plays into the fact too that there's more opportunities and chances now to do that, but I digress. Just wanted to get
to hype this performance up even more. Yeah, and Yesevich, who came in at the end of the season, started three games, number one prospect in the Jays organization, so by all rights, exciting. The 3.21 ERA, inflated whip, but pretty good strikeout numbers, ground ball stuff, looked good. And then you get into the postseason, and yeah, lights out in terms of just what he did at certain times. I know it in the end was a little bit like it kind of got inflated with a couple games where he coughed. I mean, the Mariners game, he gave up five earned runs, but yeah, 12 strikeouts against the Dodgers. You look at all of the postseason, Steve, and his strikeout numbers were insane, where he had 39 over 27 innings. He went in this mock draft prior to all of this. Let's see. It was first pick of the 14th round. So shout out to First Pitch. Was that, so who was, is that Bubba that was drafted?
No. That is, sorry, what slot was this? What
14th slot.
For that's Jake Crumpler, who does first
okay,
pitch.
Jake. Yeah. Sorry, Jake. Yeah. So Trey Yesevich goes there, and I guess the question becomes, Steve, with the helium, it probably won't be as late as the 14th round after that postseason.
No.
So how early do you think he will go? Like we grabbed Trevor Rogers in the 11th round. The 12th round had names like Sonny Gray, Cade Horton. How early does he go, and will you be interested after what you saw and kind of the prospect pedigree and all that?
I think he'll go in that 10 to 11 range. There'll be a lot of hype around him. I'm definitely interested. Like, again, like, just you heard the scouting report on him, and you know, knew he was funky, and you know, all of his pitches go glove side, right? Which is crazy. Like, right, even his slider, right? If you think about that, like when you throw a slider, like if you're like diagonally slices the zone, but to see it go almost like a screwball towards, like, it's just crazy how funky he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
you're
hearing that and seeing that and through box scores in the minors, and then seeing it on this stage is like, whoa, like this is everyone's going to be, my point is everyone's going to be on you Savage as, hey, this guy looks insane. How does anyone ever hit him? The stuff is nasty. Like, and yeah, like just watching him, like he's so over the top and so tall. Like,
yeah,
I like, who does that remind? Like, I've never seen anything like it. Like, I couldn't even think of a comp as far as like what pitcher that reminded me of, like, or what windup that reminded me of.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because they showed the overlays of him versus all the other Jays starters. It's like, it is just like 12 o'clock practically, but yeah.
Yeah. That's
so
it.
Anyway,
like,
you think
I'm interested, but I think the helium is going to maybe put him out of my price range just because of this sample from the postseason, how many eyes were on it.
Yeah. Do we know how many innings he went this year? I'm trying to look up Funky Over the Top guys in the meantime.
Dontrell
Willis.
He started in single A this year. 98 minor league innings, 14 in the regular season, and then 27 in the postseason. So he got up there. Like, he was close to 135 innings. 140 innings, so it's a pretty nice total. And you know, you couple that with the fact that he had a 41% strikeout rate in the minors. I know a lot of that came in the 33 and 17 innings between in the high A and low A. So you know, it was definitely, you know, what were the guys saying that, you know, struck out versus him in single A? Like, yeah, I guess I didn't really have a chance versus this guy striking out 13 guys in the World Series when I played him in, I don't know, in Altoona or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, it's going to be hard to lay off if he looks good in spring and he has a good foundation. But I think the problem is with pitchers like him and with the buzz and everything is it's almost like a game of chicken that people – it only takes one in the room, you know. Yeah. So it's like who's to say he won't be, I don't know, going right after like the – Blake Snell Fromber zone and everything, and then you have to kind of take a step back. Like we bought in on the Strider sweepstakes in round 9, and even that feels like I would be shocked if that's where he was going. So
it's a little it's pretty early, but I mean I don't know, you see it with some of these guys, especially that have you know, postseason performances like this.
Yep. Okay.
All right. So what about here's an interesting name who went in the 7th. You Savage or Mizorowski?
Oh no, I think I'm going Mizorowski.
Right. Okay.
I think I just like kind of the stuff that we typically point to. Like it's like a process over results and hype. And I personally have been torched in the past by following postseason trends. Like it's a pothole for me, whether it's K-Rod, you know, David Fries. Like
I think it's more on the hitter side. Like, you know, like is, you know, is Ernie Clement now like an elite fantasy player? No, like he just hit 417 for a few weeks. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, we gotta chill, but that is a good one. Just because of, you know, the fact that they're both like 22, 23 and both had the pedigree that they had coming up. But yeah, you know, I'm an extension guy, Steve. So Mizorowski probably wins there on the tiebreaker, but yeah, pitching is in good hands with these guys. So it'll be fun to watch them grow. We got to move faster through these other ones, but Jacob Marcy was one that caught my eye at pick 171 in the 15th round. I'm kind of feeling like Marcy, and I'm also, because of like my home league settings, I always keep an eye out for these high walk guys, which Marcy is definitely. But Marcy, it hit like over 290. The XBA was 283, which was a big step up from where he was at in the minors. And the fact that he attempted 20 steals in 55 games, he's a non-zero on pop. We talked about him probably 3 or 4 shows ago.
Yeah,
so
we did.
Maybe he's a dozen homers, like give or take, but the profile, which I threw in the rundown here, kind of feels like a little bit of a Nico Horner light in the outfield in terms of like how he's going to help in 5x5. So Marcy's just kind of interesting to me in that like pick 170, 180 to round out like a util slot. Not sure if you have thoughts there. The other pitching one that I was throwing out was Troy Melton, who also had some postseason action, 7 feet of extension. Despite that, he also throws 97, which is usually, it's like one or the other, you'll take either. He's got the and there, and he's got great swing and miss stuff on the fastball. He just really needs the slider, which was effective. Like he was good at run prevention and his ratios, but he needs a swing and miss pitch to take a step forward to not just rely on the fastball so much. But I love that narrative. It reminds me of Logan Gilbert early on. He's a big guy. I love the Detroit just being surrounded by Scooble. They did good stuff with Flaherty. And yeah, Melton himself threw 128 innings across minors and majors and postseason this year. So yeah, Melton went at 204. And I thought those were a couple names in addition to Yesevich, who Marcy and Melton, I feel like they caught my eye. Thoughts on either one of those before we can let you talk about the next two?
Pretty interested in both, right? Like, and it's kind of weird how even though one's a pitcher and one's a hitter, their impact on the fantasy season sort of mirrors each other in a weird way, right? Like Marcy came up what, I think a little bit after the All-Star break or maybe right around it, and had a two or three homers in his first game, had a few like four hit games and looked really good, kind of cooled off and then settled in and put together a really nice 55 game stretch here. The caveat is that it is just a 55 game stretch, right? Like that's, you know, like a playoffs plus sort of run, right? That you can get easily tricked on, and buy into way too small of a sample. That being said, there are some interesting numbers going back to his minor league days. I was interested in him as a prospect for the Padres. I was interested when the Marlins traded for him and, you know, potentially gave him a clearer path to playing time. What trade was that in? Who did the Padres get from the Marlins? I should think of that. Was that the Luis Urias? I think it was the Urias trade. Is that the Urias?
Yeah,
trade?
That sounds yeah. right.
You know, he did hit 16 homers 1 year, right? So you talk about that non-zero pop, right? You know, I'm sure the batting average is going to be regressed, like, right? Like the Fangraphs and Steamers projections have him at 230. For next year. I know that's very, very early projections, and I'm sure those will change, but they're not buying the batting average at all. But I think there's a better hitter in there than a 230 hitter. And he may not be the plus in batting average that Nico Hoerner is, but hey, a guy that could hit 250 with 12 homers and maybe get you 30 steals in a full season is definitely fantasy viable. But I'm interested. He would definitely be like on my watch list, like if he you know, doesn't get the hype and goes undrafted or anything like that, because maybe there's more to meet the eye here.
Yeah, that's a good little cold water, though, that average might be more like, you know, I remember when he came up, the projections were like 255, and then he eclipsed that big time. And the hard part about this range for a hitter is this is usually where we're shopping for a ton of pitchers.
Yeah.
Which is probably the segue to Melton. Do you have interest in Melton? I know he had a little bit of a bumpy like postseason, but he definitely like looks the part of an
ace. I've loved Melton as a prospect. Like, you know, was interested when he got called up. Always scrambled to add him off a waiver wire when it was announced he was taking a turn in the rotation. And I think given a full opportunity, that will come to fruition. Like the strikeout rates in the minors are really good. There's no like troubling walk rates, right? Like it's all high 20s, mid sixes, high 20 strikeout rate, mid sixes walk rate. You know, he's got seven different pitches he throws, six different pitches he throws, and they're all pretty good. Every single one of his pitches by Stuff Plus is rated as above average, which is crazy.
I saw something that he's got a pretty new like delivery mechanically that he's still like feeling out. So I think that's encouraging that it's like if this is kind of a floor and he's getting more and more comfortable, like we saw 45 innings of a sub 3 ERA, right? It's like he just needs to take a step forward on
strikeouts. And he throws all these pitches a bunch, right? He's got five of those pitches he throws at least 8% of the time. Four of them he throws 11% of the time or more. So it's not like he's just using
show me.
Just show me pitches, right? Like he's got a good mix that he throws between, you know, he mixes in the cutter, split finger, and curve versus lefties. You know, is able to throw the fastball to both sides. Same with the slider, which is always a good thing. I like Troy Melton a lot, and he will definitely be a guy that I'm aiming to fill out the back end of my rotation with come draft season. I'm wondering if these depth charts are updated on Fangraphs. Like, what is the Tigers rotation?
He was fifth. He was fifth in the rotation
right now. So.
Yep. Yeah. If it's accurate, he's listed as fifth.
And there's obviously going to be moves, and there's, you know, those dreaded Tariq Skubal rumors already happening, right? So we'll see.
Okay. Well, we're running a little long, so we'll stop there and take our first ad break. But then we got to get into some other names that Steve was backing in the draft room. And then we'll look at some big picture trends from the last 12 rounds. But we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. So, Steve, another postseason standout was Roky Sasaki because, like we talked about, I think on the last episode or maybe two ago when we were talking chalkboard, he kind of found his groove and his confidence and nabbed a handful of saves. It will be an off-season topic of just what their plans are for him. And, you know, I think long-term you'd have to imagine they value him as a starter, but it is kind of it's a new landscape for, you know, shutdown closers and multi-inning, and he seemed to really find his groove on some of those moments. But the good news is just for the player and some of those emotional meltdowns a little bit at the start of the year to see him get on the other side of that. But you grabbed him for our squad in the 16th round as a closer. And then, well, let's talk about Roky first. Then I want to talk about a couple other ones. But, yeah, thoughts on Roky.
Yeah, I think it's just good for him that he found a role and succeeded in it, especially for how much of a disaster his first season here was, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that postseason run doesn't happen or if he's not healthy yet, like, right, like there's nothing really to hang his hat on, just mentally and, you know, to see any chance of success or any bit of success not happen that first year is tough. And you would start to maybe question, you know, can you, I'm not saying that this is what he's questioning, but you know, that would be asked, right? Like, does he totally have the ability to perform here? So the fact that he found a role, succeeded in it, I think is huge.
And won the World Series. You know what I mean? Like,
the Dodgers bullpen was horrible. Like the Dodgers bullpen, like bottom of the lineup was like, that's why I really thought the Blue Jays were going to pull it out, like, because those were just such glaring weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And Sasaki really, really filled an important hole there and essentially became their closer and was really good at it. So I took that with the mindset of saying, hey, you know, maybe they stick with him as the closer. Maybe they see this as a role. I doubt it. He's so young and has so much potential as a starter. And the other side of the coin was, hey, he found some success, and maybe that helps his confidence, and he's able to have a healthy offseason and come in and knows what he needs to do as a starter and you know, jumpstart his career from there.
Yeah. Yeah, so Sasaki, it will be just age 25 season. Again, he's won 7 feet extension, 96 miles per hour. If he can really find the split finger, yeah, sky's the limit. So 16th round, I think, will probably scoot up, I would have to guess, after the postseason. And yeah, just you assume I think going to be
we'd
a
made
positive
this pick
spring.
Like just as he was starting to have some success in the in the bullpen role, like, you know, he wasn't like the full-time closer as this happened, but
yeah. Well, next round, we went with Colson Montgomery, who has been a kind of a marquee prospect for the White Sox for a while, but we saw him come up and just mash with 21 home runs in 70 games this season. 239 average, no speed to boot there, but for kind of a middle infield type of role, what do you think of Colson Montgomery, just 23?
Players who had more home runs in the second half than Colson Montgomery: Kyle Schwarber, Shohei Ohtani, Cal Raleigh, Junior Caminero.
Wow.
End list. He had 21 homers in 61 games in the second half, which is the least amount of games. It's only by two, but the least amount of games that anyone on that list. So, yeah, the power is absolutely legit. You know, this does look like sort of an all or nothing approach, right? He had a 31% strikeout rate in the second half. His strikeout rate on the year was 29.2%. So yes, there is batting average, strikeout rate concern, but the power is absolutely unquestioned. And blew my expectations away, right? Like he was a league winner in the second half there for some people. Like, we'll get into it later, but you know, the all value teams for second half, he could have been an MVP as far as I'm concerned. He's in the fall league again, mashing, which is encouraging, right? Because he only played half the season. Was there an injury? I think, yeah, a little bit. He did play 60 games in the minors last year too. So 32 homers across both levels. Did strike out a bunch in the minors this year too. So it's a concern, but the power, the bat speed, the quality of contact all backs up, you know, what could be a 40 homer bat. And if there is any bit of that sort of Austin Riley K rate gain, you could have an elite fantasy player here.
Yeah. 6'3" shortstop. And, yeah, like you said, Steve, I mean, it's all or nothing. Like, you kind of, there's no speed, so it's kind of tricky. Yeah, like, I know some of his player comps at short are like, you know, like Jazz Chisholm or...
This is like Corey Seager if he had a 30% strikeout rate, which is like the craziest right. thing to say, just because Corey Seager right. is like the most pure hitter.
But you're getting him in the 17th round. So I think maybe a takeaway, you know, whether it's Marcy, Colson, or the next guy, Drake Baldwin, that like this range that we usually love shopping for pitchers, there's actually some interesting bats here as well.
Yeah.
And Drake Baldwin... extremely interesting at the catcher spot. He was a name that we were more excited about the name than the role throughout the season. But eventually it was like life finds a way, and 124 games, we saw 19 homers, 80 RBI, a .274 batting average. And Baldwin, also just 24 years old, a stud, and, you know, kind of speaks to the depth of the catcher position. This feels super late, Steve. Is it just because it's kind of a timeshare projected out, or
I don't know.
What do we think?
I think this was a great pick. This was our friends at Keeper Cut, Pete Ball and Co. Like, to get Drake Baldwin in the 20th round, I know that there's a lot of interesting catchers and Raleigh in the second and all that. And we went even a little bit earlier too with Hunter Goodman, right? Langoliers went right around there. So that kind of made me regret that pick. Not that I don't think that's a great situation and a good hitter, but you know, he just looks the part. To be this young, to catch that much, and to put up an .810 OPS, without striking out that much, or you know, striking out at an elite rate, a 15% strikeout rate, an 11% barrel rate, 85th percentile in hard hit at 50%, like, you know, 19 homers. Like, this looks like a young star in the making for the Braves. Like, I could see him taking like a William Contreras-esque rise here and be one of those early catchers next year. Like, there's nothing that tells me that he's not able to do that. Maybe just the fact, I mean, still had 466 plate appearances. That's not that far off from like other standard catchers, right?
And he DH'd quite a bit. Like, Fangraphs has him on projections for 134 games, Steamer for 111. But like, if he's DHing with Sean Murphy there,
and the way that the Braves lineup is like disappointed 2 years in a row now, like, they need Drake Baldwin to be really good. They need him to be a guy that they count on. Just because they've been disappointed now 2 years in a row. Like, you're not going to, you know, you can't just say, oh, you know, bounce back to 2023. Now it's been a bit for them.
Yeah. So. And it's easy to see the step forward because he's one of those that like elite bat speed, the launch angle isn't perfect, but the barrel is still good. Yeah. So it's like, that's something you like gambling on, right? It's like, you know that he swings super hard. It could just be one tweak from unlocking 30 plus homers. So yeah, that's a good name as
or
well.
Or just in a good Baldwin. Year when there is a lot of fly balls and a good home run the fly ball ratio, right? Like
and a better
could easily step into 30, right?
Totally. And the offense actually is firing on cylinders, and that the 80 RBIs turns into 100 plus from the catcher's.
We just talked ourselves into Drake Baldwin 1C.
I think so. We made the argument. Yeah. So I wanted to throw out some of the new-ish names to the board because I always get it's the homework section where, you know, where people who are close to some of these organizations are trying to, you know, take the pick that has some cachet that they can talk about. But in the 16th round, Peyton Tolley went, the number two prospect for the Red Sox. About fell out of my seat, Steve. 7'5" extension and 97 miles per hour.
You're
going
to have a lot of Peyton Tolley next year.
Yeah, so Tolley will be a name to watch. You always got kind of the pitchers coming over, like from Japan. Mm-hmm. This year, Tatsuya Imai. I had to look up him. He went in the 18th round. 27-year-old, mid-90s. He was kind of categorized as like, I guess, a low ceiling but immediate contributor. Mm-hmm. He's got a 55-60 grade fastball slider. It's just I-M-A-I is how you spell that last name.
And I don't know if he's officially going to be posted. I think it was like pretty assumed. I just don't know if it was finalized yet. I know there is another big name.
There were a couple articles. Yeah. Yeah. About him, but
I just don't know if it was fully confirmed.
Okay,
but I think the assumption is that yes, he's going to be posted.
It looks like Giants, 12 hours ago, the San Francisco Giants have been linked with them, but that's all rumor mill. Imai is an interesting one, and then, Bryce Eldridge was in the 21st round, number one prospect for the Giants. This is a 6'6" first baseman, which is kind of that extremes that we were talking about with Montgomery, because he's 30% strikeout rate range, but loads of pop. I think he had like 25 homers in the minors in like 110 games or something. So definitely 30 homer.
Yeah.
102.
And got a cup of coffee. 10 games. 28 ABs, 37
I missed that. Was that any stats of note there? Was he just striking out and hitting 100?
He had one RBI, hit 107. So, but
that's going to be the Bryce Eldridge experience.
Pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then I wanted to let you talk about Kevin McGonigal, Steve, because you drafted him for us, and I don't know much other than Tigers' top prospect.
Yeah, this might be my favorite hitting prospect this year. Like, all this guy does is mash. You know, he's like this average first guy who doesn't strike out. You know, he never had a strikeout rate above 12.6% at any stop in the minors. Now all of a sudden he's hitting 12 home runs in 46 games at AA and had 19 home runs on the year. So, you know, this is like if Stephen Kwan had 19 homers in 400 ABs at the minor league level.
Is there speed there? It kind of sounds Altuve-esque.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know how much you want to put into the 22 stolen bases in 2024 between high A and low A. Did have 20 bases. Did have how many stolen? 10 this year, was caught 7 times. So I don't know. The speed is 50-50 as far as the grade. So looks like he could do it, and you know, who knows how much it is just taking advantage of pitchers that can't hold guys on in the minors, catchers that can't throw, all that. But yeah,
the Tigers were dead last on stolen bases across the league, so
yeah,
maybe that's not as much part of the profile, but even so, I mean, it's exciting to have like a 12% strikeout guy who's developing pop a hit tool.
There's a few guys I know, like Scout the Stat Line on Twitter has just been all over him for years. I think his nickname is the Professor, because like McGonagall, it's like a Harry Potter professor, right? Like, so even another more reason to be in. But I absolutely love Kevin McGonagall. I could see him making the opening day roster just with the Tigers being good and, you know, going, making the playoffs and winning a round, right? And almost going to the ALCS. I know there's the Scooble trade rumors, but I don't think they're good. Like, they should hold on to him. And I think McGonagall could potentially win that spot out of spring training, because, like, right, who do they have at Ross? Like, they play Trey Sweeney there, Javier Baez. Like, it's gettable.
Yeah, it is. I love this prototype. This is what I was trying to chase with Chase Madroth for the White Sox. They're like, oh, is there going to be any pop there? But no, it looks like it's actually there's more reasons to believe there for him. So, okay, so those are some of the newish names to the board. There are some other ones that you guys can get in, like, the show notes. Steve, do you want to talk about kind of the other macro takeaway on just some of the bounce back arms that were from, like, you know, round 16 to 21?
Maybe this is just me, but, like, is there?
Oh, I looked at Weathers big time.
Right, but, like, there's so many guys coming back off of injuries that are big names that go late that, and maybe this is just a product of drafting this early, right? Like, you know, if a few of these guys come into spring training and look healthy and seemingly back to being what they were, you know, in prior years.
They'll, like, shoot up.
Yeah, they'll shoot up. So maybe that's just a product of this. But we've done this draft for 3-4 years now, and I don't remember, like, this big. And maybe that's just the way that it worked with who had surgery and stuff. But, like, Grayson Rodriguez in the 19th, Kodai Senga in the 17th, Ryan Weathers in the 20th. I know maybe that's more of, you know, he has to prove things first and hasn't actually had a full run there. But Chris Bubich, who was unbelievable in the first half, like, and again, who knows, like, how healthy he'll be. But Garrett Cole in 19th, like, Garrett Cole, like,
in the 19th round.
Yeah, yeah. And also, again, like, he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. If he'll be like Sandy Alcantara if he's, where, not saying his performance, where he was a little disappointing in the first half, but he'll be drafted accordingly if he's coming into spring and, like, making full starts in spring training. Shane McClanahan, sort of same issue, but there's just a lot of potential bounce back arms, more so than in other years, in my, like, anecdotal takeaway there.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those moments where you just kind of feel old on other names when you look at the board.
Yeah, maybe that's also just it. Like, maybe we're just getting old.
Yeah, but, like, you see, like, man, Aaron Nola in the 14th, Luis Castillo in the 14th, Zach Gallen in the 18th.
Yeah, like, some of these guys are pretty good. Like, Gallen, think of how good he was down the stretch, right? Like,
Who else? And he was going in the 8th round last year. Yeah, it's like, do we think Gallen is just, like, washed for his career?
Like, yeah, Castillo, like, for as much as we faded him this year, like, he still kind of had, like, a Luis Castillo pretty good year.
Yeah, solid enough for sure. Yeah, that's definitely a takeaway, that there may be value to find in the changing of the guard.
Yeah.
And who are we too early to write off there? Because there's no shortage of names, whether it's injury or a down year or what have you. But okay, so that was round 12 through 23. We're running long, but it's great discussion. We'll take our second ad break, then we'll talk about our fantasy MVPs for me and Steve this year. But we're going to take ad break 2. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, how we've got this set up, which I love kind of your structure here, of the Mike Trout Award and the Charlie Blackmon Award. Can you talk us through kind of the meaning of each of those?
Yeah, it's been a recurring theme when we talk about this on the show, and, like, when we do, like, mid-season awards, things like that, right? Like, a fantasy MVP, like, and now that it's MVP season, right, we have all the announcements of the finalists and all that. It's always interesting to watch, and I just always like award season just because I'm a baseball nerd in that. So I don't think it's fair to just give out one standard MVP, right? Because that's most likely going to come from someone in the first round. And, like, yeah, that's who the fantasy MVP was. He provided the most value. He's sort of the best player, right? So I think it should be broken down into two. And the two awards that I have here are the Mike Trout Award. So that's, like, the most valuable best player because, you know, Mike Trout was the best player and was drafted one. And it was Mike Trout and then everybody else. So that's sort of how you would give out that award. It could be someone that's taken a little bit later, but Mike Trout Award, who is the best player? Like, who is the best fantasy player? Then the Charlie Blackman Award. Charlie Blackman's the name that comes to mind. That's like sort of a guy that goes from waiver wire to league winner and first rounder, like perennially for the next few years. So like a guy that provided the most value. So who was a waiver wire pickup or late round pickup that provided the most value? Because those are sort of two different, you know, ways that you could look at it, broken down into two awards. So rather than us having to deal with the semantics of arguing our perspective, we could just break it down into two awards and hand it out that way.
Yep. I like it. We'll set us off with the your Mike Trout Award.
Yeah. So for it was close, actually, for me between Shohei Ohtani, who I gave it to, and Aaron Judge. The tiebreaker is just that Judge missed a decent amount of time. Was a little bit slow coming back, and you know, Ohtani just had another Ohtani type year. Oh, and he also pitched really well in the limited innings that he did in the regular season. So like he essentially basically had the same year that he had last year, less 30 steals, which is nuts. He still went 55-20, right? Like think about all the 50-50 content there was last year. Someone had 50. We get excited for 2020 season. Ohtani went 55-20 and no one talked about it just because he went 54-59 the year before that. Pitched well too, like really well. 47 innings of a 33% strikeout rate and 4.8% walk rate. So like in the leagues where he's one player, like you even get that. I do think that there is a little bit of a knock for when he hits and pitches, right? Like there just has to be. And that little bit of knock was 20 points in OPS from a 1036 to a 1014. But he definitely does hit worse on like days that he's pitching and probably the days after he's hitting. I could be totally wrong with that, but there's definitely
it seems like it.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that he also was tied with Vlad in the postseason for the most with 8 home runs. So it's like, I know that doesn't count for fantasy, but he's just
on
baseball god,
so,
man.
Just one of those things that like you need to just cherish watching him for as long as we can, because I doubt we'll ever see anyone like this.
Yeah. No, it's cool that I know it was back in like July and we were asking, you know, of these guys that are on pace, I think it might have been our All-Star break show, like who's going to end up in the 50 club, and we did get Judge, Ohtani, Schwarber and Cal Raleigh, and Eugenio Suarez with 49 as well.
Yeah,
so it was
close.
Like really it was a big slugger year. But yeah, Ohtani, it's unbelievable that 3 homer 10 strikeout game or whatever it was. Like we didn't even mention that.
Yeah, we didn't
when
even
we were
mention
talking,
that.
We didn't
as
even
far
mention
as opposed,
that. And it's like that says everything about
it. And that came like right after like he was like, you know, hitting like 100 for his last 10 games, right? And like people were like,
yeah,
oh,
just
it's
exploded.
Caught up to him. Yeah, he just
very Pujolsian because Albert did that a time or two where it was like, was he going to wake up? And then he just like won a World Series game
then
by
imagine
himself.
If
with, like,
Pujols struck out 10 guys.
turned around. He did pitch a time or two. He might have 1K in his career and like a ninth inning. Yeah. But yeah, Ohtani, absolutely hats off. And he and Judge, I mean, this is the first time in a while that the 1-2 have delivered the 1-2 and will continue to be the 1-2. Yeah. So that's pretty cool too. I wanted to go Judge for mine, but then I was like, let's talk about something else, because I feel like to tie a bow on just this whole season, and it's been no secret that I keep bringing up Cal Raleigh, that like I know that some regression has to be there. I know that mid second round, if that's where it ends up, is a steep price to pay, and the position at catcher is getting so much deeper. But yeah, 60 home runs, 14 steals. I'll just say that again, 14 steals for Cal Raleigh, 60 home runs, 247 average, and 125 RBIs. So on the player rater, he was about $1 behind Ohtani. But the reason I threw him in here is just, and I know they factor in like position, but the number two guy on like the dollar value at catcher was $22 in Hunter Goodman, and Cal Raleigh was $47.
More
and
than double the next guy.
More than double. So then when you look at Judge or Ohtani, it's more like, oh, well, you got Juan Soto, who's like $5 less. So I just think Cal Raleigh, what he did, it would be so cool if he continued it, just because I think he's kind of emerged as a fan favorite and
extremely also, likable.
Also in his own right. I got it right here. Let me just see where he landed on postseason. Yeah, I knew he had a big one, but 1081 OPS and hit another five or six homers.
Yeah.
So between regular season and postseason, 65 homers for Cal Raleigh, which is just awesome. And he's just turned into the franchise there. So
honestly, it could have been for me a nominee for, or I debated giving him the Blackman Award.
Because, totally bad because he was going at like pick 90 or 100 look what you got from him. Well, Steve, why don't you go with your Blackman choice? I'm very excited about this as well because we've kind of planted a flag here.
Yeah. My Charlie Blackman, you know, who provided the most value for a late round or waiver wire pickup is George Springer. George Springer is like if you look at the OPS leaders for 2025, you know, you'll be surprised to see that just where Springer lands, right? I'm just sorting every single qualified hitter. Where do you think he lands? As far, I don't know if you're looking at this offhand.
I'm not. Among all hitters?
Yep. All 15th, qualified hitter.
Just because I know he's a monster. 15th.
There's two guys ahead of him, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. He was third in the league in OPS. It was, you know, in only 586 plate appearances. All these other guys had, you know, 680 plus. But yeah, he was had a better OPS by 11 points over Cal Raleigh. That is just how good.
I can't believe over like Schwarber as well, who is in the 50 homer club. And
second in the league
long.
In OBP, to Aaron Judge. Fifth in the league in slugging behind Judge, Ohtani, Raleigh, and Schwarber. And fourth in batting behind Judge, Bichette, and Jacob Wilson. So just
didn't feel
absolutely insane offensive season for George.
So we grabbed him, for anybody who missed our last episode, we grabbed him in the middle of the fifth round and kind of felt good about it because the Discord chat kind of lit up and people were like, man, I was thinking about it, but I respect it. But Springer himself, with the deep postseason run, added on another four homers, hit 284. So like,
what was the OBP?
899.
No, it's OBP.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me see. Is
899 OPS.
347 OBP.
So it didn't get on base at the what I mean. Hey, it's just such a small sample, but
yeah exactly. But yeah, maybe the only bad news about Springer is we were so in, and now this postseason run might have just
people be like,
oh no, he's
gonna be
beast.
Like a top four round. Like I know we kind of like we took him in the fifth, but like.
I think he might. I mean, he will be 37.
Like Springer or Jarren Duran, like Springer or Wyatt Langford. As much as we love Riley Green, Springer or Riley Green, like
I think those are going to be the questions. Which is
those guys would hope to have the season that Springer had last year. He just did it.
I know. It just comes down to like, but we backed the narrative from early on where it was like, oh no, I completely changed. I'm, you know, always swinging my A swing and not trying to just poke the ball out there. I'm just swinging for the fences. And you saw it with the bump up on the bat speed went from like middle of the road to, you know, a red slider and the best barrel rate. Like we talked about it last episode, if you guys missed it, but all of these numbers were like 2018 George Springer. So
yeah,
I think I'll be in, man. I know that we've talked about him quite a bit, but it's a great pick there.
Was this mine, the best year of George Springer's career?
I think there's one other year, like maybe rabbit.
Yeah,
ball.
He had a 974 in 2019.
And I think more steals, possibly.
Yeah. I mean,
because I thought for a while he was like
he stole 16 his second year, And his career high was 20 in 2023. So 18 was his second most steals ever this year.
So 2019, oh yeah, 39 homers, just six steals. Yeah, that is nuts.
By WAR, it was his second best year. 6.1 in 2019, 5.2 this year. Crazy.
But without even a close call, the best batting average of his career with .309.
Yeah, yeah. The next was .292.
We're not even talking about it. We're talking about all the other clips, but like the fact that Springer hit like .310, almost stole 20 bases is freaking crazy. Yeah.
WRC plus his best year by 11 points. So
there you go. There you go. Mine is Christopher Sanchez, and I feel like one of the reasons I picked him is because we talked about him so much coming into the season, and he was so good. And so consistent, really. Like, rostering him was a treat. It just felt like there weren't any supreme blow-ups. I'm sure there were one or two bumps in the road when you have, like, a 250 ERA. Not that that is anything to sneeze at. But eclipsed 200 innings, which has always been, like, an asset for Sanchez, where you say, like, oh, you know, he's an innings eater. But to get 200 in kind of the modern environment and over a strikeout an inning, 106 whip, like Sanchez was a beast. And where I was drafting him at the tail end of the season was in that like 150 range, overall ADP. And now in this draft, what did he go here? I think he was maybe the sixth. So he went after Skubal, Skeens, Crochet, Hunter Brown, Yamamoto, and then Sanchez went in the
middle
of the fourth.
Firmly entrenched as a top 10 pitcher. Crazy.
Yeah, and it was just
rightfully
he was,
so.
He was phenomenal, and that was even with, was it the cutter that he wasn't throwing or the? Because remember coming into the season, Nick was kind of leading the charge at like if he holds on, I swear it was the cutter because it was when Nick was talking about the season of the cutter and everything, that if he throws this pitch to lefties, like it's going to be a huge thing for him. And it was like those early results were pretty good, but it was kind of like, oh, he's not doing what he was doing in spring. It could be even better than this, but it's still solid and you'll take it. So again, maybe there's a small step forward for a 28-year-old that's like you said, he's entrenched as a SP1 top 10 guy. So I think for how much we talked about him early on in the year, I just wanted to kind of come around full circle there. But yeah, a lot of good options for those breakout seasons. Any other closing thoughts on this? I know we're running a touch over, but
I think you definitely deserve some flowers there. I thought Christopher Sanchez was fine and like good. I was not in on him at all, or really like I don't think I had any shares, but what a year, and yeah, he's firmly like established himself as an ace now, in real life and fantasy, right?
I know, yeah. Well, you had some good. You were a little more in on Hunter Brown in that like 100 range, so you definitely.
Yeah, I guess
picks,
he was. There was more hype on him than Sanchez, though, for sure. He was definitely.
Sanchez was. Yeah. Sanchez might be. I'm trying to scan here. Was Sanchez like the biggest riser from like or ADP 150 range?
Like a guy that was drafted, like a guy that was not someone that popped up. And
I would say Brian Wu was, but he was even more just a little bit pricier. But these are prime examples of why it's hard to draft a Jacob Marcy because if you want
to throw as many darts as possible on these types of guys. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. We will be every other week, so we'll see you in a couple weeks before Thanksgiving. But appreciate this. Hope you guys enjoyed the playoffs, enjoyed taking a look at the draft board with us the past two episodes. And during the off season, if you guys want to throw out any topics, you guys can always hit us up on Twitter, email, any of it, and we're happy to get into it. But otherwise, wraps us up for episode 197. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.